Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's Thursday, February the 1st, and your Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. Today on the show, Ben welcomes back 48th Ward Alderwoman Lenny Manna Hoppenworth. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, what's happening in politics, what's happening in art, you want to get that new podcast, The Sit Down with Shawnee Dez, it's all there for you. Just head to ChicagoReader.com. You'll find it real easy. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, just head to ChicagoReader.com. /Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Brandon Wins Thursday, and here's why. All right, I'm going to be as cool and dispassionate as I possibly can about what I'm about to say, because I know that no matter what I say, it will upset somebody. And that's the way it is on this particular issue of the war in the Middle East, if you call it a war, and it is very much a war. And so yesterday, the Chicago City Council voted, 23-23 with the mayor casting the deciding vote to support a ceasefire in the Middle East. I wholeheartedly supported that endeavor. Had I been an alderman, which is such a joke, the notion that I could ever get elected to anything, I would have voted for it as well. So I'm going to pause for a moment before I get into the merits of it and concentrate on Brandon Johnson, Mayor Brandon Johnson. For the last, 6 months or so at least, the narrative on Brandon Johnson and his rule at the city council and the city of Chicago as a whole is one that I've sort of been supporting, that he was not really in charge, not really in command, didn't understand how the game was played, didn't have the aides or allies or legislative gurus that was helping him to help him shepherd through whatever legislation he wanted to get through, even though he had some victories. That was sort of the take on Brandon Johnson, Mayor Brandon Johnson. That nice guy, but he can't get things done. Well, yesterday he got something done. As I said, 23-23, it was a tie vote on the resolution calling for a ceasefire in the Middle East. And he passed the decisive vote to approve the ceasefire. It's interesting what the response is. The response from people who support the resolution for a ceasefire, as do I, is one of relief and the hope that in some way, and I realize this is an exceedingly unlikely, but that in some ways, this will help advance the cause of peace in Gaza and in Israel. I realize one more time, it is extremely unlikely that it will have an impact. But nonetheless, it's important that the city of Chicago register its voice on this matter for many different reasons. Number one, the United States is a huge mediator in this conflict. So we have a role in this. We're playing a role in what goes on in the Middle East. Number two, the United States is a huge funder of Israel. So our tax dollars are at play here. And number three, within the Democratic Party itself, there is a growing movement of support for Palestinian rights. And that is the new element into this mix. I've been around a long, long time. I've been following Middle East politics for a long, long time. I have been in midst passionate discussions with people on all sides of this issue. And I've pretty much heard absolutely every argument that anyone has ever made on this issue. Until now, there has never been a strong voice pushing for Palestinian rights. And now we see it. We see it in our streets with marches. We see it at Chicago public schools with walkouts by students. We see it in the halls of Congress, where there are Democratic legislators who are speaking up on behalf of Palestine, Palestinians. And we're seeing it in the city council, where there's strong voices of support for Palestinian rights. And I think it's that voice that's been given to people who've had no voice in this discourse that is so threatening to so many people. I think that's really the unspoken threat. And so Brandon Johnson, he made his decision. He said, I am going to stand for peace in the Middle East. I am going to be as neutral as I can be in this particular conflict. I am going to acknowledge the lives lost on October 7th. When Hamas slaughtered innocent Israelis. And I'm also going to acknowledge the lives lost, the thousands and thousands of lives lost subsequent to October 7th when Israel retaliated, the lives of Palestinians in Gaza. And that resolution yesterday does not take a stand in any specific way on whether Israel's right or Palestine's right. What happened in 1948, what happened in 1967, what happened in 1973, et cetera, and so forth. Doesn't take a stand. It merely says that we want peace. It's that very neutrality, I think, that is so upsetting to so many people, because it is a change. And it's a threatening change, and it's a change that the Democratic Party is really struggling to deal with. Are their voices being heard, not been heard in the past? And how does the Democratic Party go forward with that? That's the challenge. Joe Biden is facing that challenge in a political way coming into November's election. And Democrats across the country are going to have to deal with that in a very real way. And we dealt with it here in the city of Chicago. Why do I call it a triumph for Brandon Johnson? Because that was his position. He wanted that resolution passed. And he did what he had to do, legislatively speaking, to pass it. He got four alder people who had previously said they weren't going to vote for the resolution. That's leadership, whether you like the outcome or not. If just imagine Rahm had pulled it off, Mayor Rahm. Just imagine the coverage for Mayor Rahm in the papers today. Oh, my God, the maestro. He truly understands politics. He knows how the game is played. Just imagine if it was Michael Joseph Madigan, the master of Springfield, once again plays his hand. I remember going back to when the White Sox Stadium had to be funded by the state. This is ancient history. Probably none of you remember. But Jim Thompson was the governor at the time. Somehow or other, they stopped the clock. The official clock stopped so he can muster up the votes he needed. So they didn't miss their deadline. I mean, I could go so far back as the LBJ and how he twisted arms and did what he had to do to get legislation passed through the Senate when he was the leader of the Senate. So I got to give him credit. I got to give Brandon Johnson credit. Putting aside whatever your opinion is of this legislation or this resolution, I know it's threatening to a lot of people. Put that aside. He shows that he's learning how to play the game. Definitely, when I consider it in contrast to how he handled the matter of Sanctuary City. Remember that one? Where he ended up with Alderman Rosa standing in the hallway trying to block Alderman from having passageway to getting through to the city council. We've come a long way, Brandon Johnson. I read in the papers that he was on the phone pleading his case, and it worked. So it's a new day in the city of Chicago. It's a new day, both in terms of the voice of the left being heard. And it's also a new day I guess, for Mayor Brandon Johnson going forward, showing he's learning how to play the game, got what he wanted out of the Chicago City Council. And we'll see if he can do work this magic, so to speak, his legislative magic. If he could be the maestro that Madigan was, that Rahm was. Daley didn't even have to worry about this. Although, if you call, you recall Mayor Daley did have to deal with a veto on the big box ordinance. And when he got Alderman to flip on that and go his way, what did they say about him? That's the mayor. That's a man who knows how to run the city. So come on, guys. All you said that about Mayor Daley and Mayor Rahm, I think it's time you give Brandon Johnson his due. All right. Without further ado, I'm going to bring on my guest, the distinguished alderman of the PA board, Lenny Mana Hoppenworth, who was at the city council meeting yesterday and watched the debate go down. Welcome back, Lenny.
Ben, thanks for having me. You know, yesterday, I wish you were there. Did you listen to it? Because if you listen to it, you can't get the same feeling about a meeting unless you're actually there. I think that there's something about the microphones that kind of blocks the experience that you could get when you're actually in the room, because it's not just who's behind me, because I sit in the third row and the public speakers are right behind me, but there's also another whole floor, and it was completely full. I mean, folks have been coming to our city council meetings in droves, right? Because they want to have their voices heard. Of course, we have the regulars like George Blakemore, who comes to every single meeting. But we also have folks who are coming in maybe for the first time, maybe since October, to have their voices heard about what we really need to be talking about, which is not, I don't think, so much as being neutral, but on the side of human life. And valuing human life, no matter if you're in the city of Chicago or around the globe, we value human life. And that's what Democrats do. You know, we come together to figure out ways that we affirm life, no matter who you are, whether whatever your identity or your class, this should cut across race and class and ethnicity and the color of your skin and what kind of religion you follow. But right now we're in this time when we're thinking like calling for peace and calling for unconditional release of hostages and ensuring humanitarian access is neutral. I don't know, Ben, I take issue with that. I think that yesterday the city council was packed. It was not only folks who, and as you may or may not know, we have the largest population of Palestinians in the nation, right here in the Chicagoland area, and also for the Jewish population too, right? Like, we have the highest population of Jewish people in Chicago, and we have people who just value human life, who are showing up and making their voices heard. And again, like I said, maybe it's for the first time, but they're signing up and they're taking the 3 minutes that they have, either by Zoom or on the microphone, right behind my chair. I sit on the third row. And they're participating in democracy. These are young people. These are people who feel like they have been talking about this for many years now, and we're finally bringing it to the forefront because of what happened on October 7th, where we had over 1,200 Israelis killed and 240 Israeli hostages taken by Hamas, and right now it's not just what's happening in Gaza, it's happening in the 48th Ward, where I represent Edgewater and Andersonville and Uptown, where we have neighbors. We have neighbors who are hurting because they have family there. And it's not just happening here in the 48th Ward. It's happening all across the city, where somebody has been impacted either personally or they have family over there in Gaza. And not just here, it's happening in City Hall, where we have colleagues who have family and who are hurting because of what's happening over there in Gaza. And fine, you know, I am a new alder person, you know, started last May, and my jurisdiction is supposed to be for 54,000 people. You know, I'm just one of 50 alder people in the city of Chicago, right? And we're supposed to like stay in our lane. But there's a moment right now that we're in, and I think it's a very important moment where we cannot ignore what's happening, and we cannot ignore the pain of our neighbors and our colleagues. And we cannot continue to act like neutrality is the goal. We want to say that we value life, and we value the hurt, and acknowledge the hurt that people are experiencing right now. And to not talk about it would be, I believe, a dereliction of our duties as sitting elected officials in seats of power. There's no reason to not lead with our values, especially right now. And so I voted to pass the substitute resolution for Uniting for Peace. I could, you know, point to many things that we can agree on, you know, no matter, you know, where you stand on the crisis that's happening in the Middle East right now, especially when we're talking about ensuring humanitarian access. You know, we're talking about land that has been devastated. Look, I'm a healthcare worker. I'm a mother, and I have had three children. And right now we're talking about land that has no working hospitals. We have doctors, you know, who are saying that there is no place, no safe, sterile place for pregnant women, of which there are tens of thousands, to have emergency C-section. And they are actually doing these operations without anesthesia. And we're talking about more lives that are children, 10,000 children that are losing their limbs every single day. And they have to do these amputations again without sterile working conditions or anesthesia. This is wrong. When you're talking about neutrality, I don't get it, Ben, you know?
Well, no, the neutrality I was alluding to was that the language in the actual resolution did not get involved in the histories of conflict in this region, who was right, who was wrong, who's more justified than the other. It dealt with the what you were just talking about, the reality of life in Gaza, where people are getting bombed, and it's a horrific health conditions, and there's lack of food and water, and that this is a crisis that demands an immediate ceasefire. That is the neutrality that I was alluding to. You're right. You took a stand for peace and the end of war and called for a ceasefire. But I give credit to the resolution, and that, my humble opinion, it didn't get bogged down into the old screaming matches and shouting matches about, again, what happened in 67, what happened in 48, what happened in 73, et cetera, and so forth. And it just dealt with this immediate disaster, catastrophe. So that's what I was alluding to when I said neutral. And that, I think, irritates a lot of people, that it was neutral in that regards. And I contrast it with what went down in October, where the city council, by voice vote, passed a resolution that essentially said Israel had the right to defend itself. And I went on the mic then as saying, I would have been with Rosanna voting no on that one, because I don't want to encourage the kind of just overwhelming, violent, vengeful counterattack at this moment. This is just like, That's what I was getting at. But when I meant neutral.
I get it.
Yeah. But let's get back to before we talk about what yesterday's horrific news. Just like a horrific news day in the city of Chicago yesterday with the shootings in your ward. I just want to get into the whole issue of staying in your lane, which I kind of smile at whenever I make fun of the city council. Lenny, you know this. You know me a long time, as much as anyone does. Okay, so when most aldermen have very parochial, or many aldermen have very parochial views of the world, they deal with service complaints by their constituents, they don't generally use the city council's forum to deal with things outside of their ward or outside of the city. So when they do venture into matters of foreign policy, people mock them and say, stay in your lane. But my belief is it's like only the people saying that are people who are upset with the lane, with the decision the city council makes, if you follow what I'm saying. So many of the people who are deriding the council for what went down yesterday did not criticize the council in October when they passed a resolution by voice vote supporting Israel's right to defend itself, if you follow what I'm saying. It's only now, I think it's really curious now, when, again, what I call a neutral call for peace, that's when you hear people say, stay in your lane. Why are you bothering with this? This is a waste of your time. You could be dealing with real issues that affect people in the city of Chicago. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I think that it is, you know, I do want to say that I'm here to make friends, right, Ben? I'm here to work with my colleagues to get things done, because there is a lot of stuff that we need to address in Chicago, from houselessness to jobs to small businesses, everything. And so I want to work with everyone. I understand that things are very difficult right now, and we are hurting, you know, and I respect my colleagues, you know, especially the only sitting Jewish colleague in my row in all of city council. And I have been listening to my constituents, which, you know, in Edgewater, we have many Jewish constituents, including we have the self-help home, which is, one of the first mutual aid organizations that is now a senior living center for those who survived the Holocaust, right? So, but interestingly to me, it is not a race to the bottom, right? We can't twist the words around to make it, make sense to your own small bubble. We all want the same thing. And to what you're saying is, if it's not going your way, you're going to say something else, yeah, like twist it around and say this is not worth your time. And to that, I say you're not listening to what the resolution actually says. It's exactly what you said earlier. It doesn't point to the historical horrible nature of what's happening in the Middle East. It really speaks to the humanity of this moment and what we're about. And so to take a strong stance on our values should never be an issue, never be an issue. And so I feel that this was a very important time for us to stand up and to speak up for so many people who are hurting. And I think that we can do better in terms of our processes, but this one, I think that we have been mulling over for too long. Like, it's been over 100 days, right, since this happened. And we're all, I'm trying to figure it out. We're trying to do this all together. And I know tensions are high right now, but I feel very good about this resolution that was passed. And we need to start along the path of actually healing our people in Chicago, in our neighborhoods right now, because that's where it has to start. To the point of, what are we doing outside of our lane talking about foreign affairs? We should care. We should care. It matters because we are all connected in some ways, right? And also we have representatives that can actually move the needle on these issues. And we learned that in 2016, right? When we had a president that we did not want in office. And what did we want to do? We wanted to make a difference. And so we learned who actually represents us at the federal level. That's what we have to do. But we all have to work together. Now that I'm a sitting alderperson in the 48th ward, of course, we're going to have relationships with everybody, including those at the state, county, federal levels. That's what we have to do is create the relationships here. I'm not going to go over there to Palestine and, and treat a pregnant woman who has to have an emergency C-section. I can't do that, right? And I'm not going to solve, the two-state solution, which we really actually need to create lasting peace in the Middle East right now. I can't do that. That's not in my lane. But what I can say is that it matters. It matters to people who are watching. It matters to young people. It matters to the Palestinians who have family over there, who live over here. And it matters to Jewish people who say we need a ceasefire now because we need to ensure that we're addressing the humanitarian crisis and making sure that people are getting what they need to lead at least, I don't even know what kind of life they're living in there right now. There's no working, there's no water. There's no sanitary conditions. There's no food. There's actually of all the starving people in the world right now, 95% of them are in Gaza. That's wrong. How for us to not say anything would be wrong. So, I don't know, staying in lanes. I think that we come from all over the place. I'm the daughter of Filipino immigrants, right? If something was happening over there, of course I am tied to that. I think that perhaps my I would be living in the Philippines if not for colonialism and imperialism, right? Our ancestors would still be in the land that they that they want to be in. But here we are in this moment where I'm an American, Asian American, and proud of it. And also I'm tied to my ancestors in another country. And I think that's really it. We are not a melting pot of every single country, but we are such a diverse area in Edgewater, and we can't in Edgewater, we're not going to turn a blind eye in this moment. We have to address what's happening in Palestine because we have too many who have contacted us. I've talked to other alder people across the city of Chicago. We've had tens of hundreds of calls, emails, visits to the ward to talk about what's happening in city council and the resolutions that we're taking up. And most people that are coming to us are saying that we need an immediate humanitarian ceasefire because we value life and we need to make sure that all the hostages are released and we need to ensure that we're making sure that people can access so that we can get people the things that they need, food, water, clean, safe conditions in living. So it's not that I don't think complicated of an issue. And I think that people are trying to make it such that it is complicated, but to me, it's not. It's just to say that we value life and we value our neighbor's hurt. We acknowledge our neighbor's hurt right now in this moment. And we, as people who have worked really hard to be elected into positions of power, should not squander this moment.
Well put, in my humble opinion. Lenny Amana Hoppenworth, she's a rookie alderman, but you sound pretty wise there. All right, Lenny, let's shift from what went down yesterday in the city council and talk about what went down in on the north side of Chicago yesterday. Very horrific murder. This is the second time, I want to say, in 3 weeks, Lenny. I've lost track of time. Where high school kids, CPS high school kids, were victims of daylight murders. It took place yesterday in Thorndale, in your ward. Three students who I believe all went to Senn High School, Nicholas Senn High School. And we're walking down the street and a car pulled up and some gunmen jumped out and fired away. And one 16-year-old, I think 16-year-old was how old he was murdered, and the two other in the hospital. Talk a little bit about what happened yesterday and what you know about it. Go ahead, Lenny.
Yeah, so I was on my way back from city council, and actually my director of engagement was with our state senator and his office and the Chamber of Commerce and a representative from Loyola walking down Broadway because they were doing a business walk, and they saw a crowd of kids fighting, and they spilled out from Thorndale onto Broadway. There were many police there already because what had just happened was school was let out. So this is Thorndale. This is a very well-used thoroughfare from the school to the Red Line. And it's also the border between two police districts, the 20th district and the 24th district. And there was another child trying to give compressions and life to the victim that was on the ground. This is wrong, and this should not be happening anywhere. It's the second time, like you said, at a CPS school in just a few weeks. We had a press conference where we had Mayor Brandon Johnson there, and we had the deputy mayors for community policing and education and the principals, and the community came out to say that we're going to do something different. We're going to do something better, and we have to address the hurt that that everyone is experiencing right now, because this is something that doesn't happen in Edgewater. You know, this is a relatively, and maybe some would say one of the safest police districts in Chicago, the 20th district. And so gun violence is not like in other wards. It's and where other schools have to bring in trauma-informed practitioners to talk about incidents like this that happen in neighborhoods. This is going to be a very long process for our young people who had to witness what happened, who called and to get help from the police. And they need time and space to do that. But it's not like in other neighborhoods in Chicago where gun violence is the norm, and it happens all the time. We need to think about not normalizing gun violence, especially when it happens to our children. You know, I'm a mother of three, and one of them is still a teenager and just a few years older than the child that was gunned down. And no parent wants to bury their kid, right? So we have to do something better. And we have to address the pain that not just, the families and the friends and the students, but the community at large, and do something different across the city.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct, Lenny. And I've had this conversation on the show many times before. There is, oh my goodness, there's, it's just a brazen retaliatory mentality in the world, not just in the city of Chicago. In many ways, it's in the world. But this is happening here in our city. And the notion that there's somehow or other acceptable that you're mad at someone, so you just gun them down, and your 17-year-old or 16-year-old, you have access to the weapons.
You're 15 years old, Ben. Yeah. You're 15 years old, and you have access to guns. You know, I'm talking to Carol Friedman. I think you might have had her on her show because she's from Indivisible Aisle 9, but she's a former principal. You know, she's a sitting LSC member, and she said, you know, she's in Florida right now, and she said it's happening everywhere. But you know what they're doing in Florida, Ben? They're trying to lower the age that you need to be to get a gun. What is that?
Yeah, by the way, I do know Carol Friedman. Shout out Carol Friedman. For a brief, like a year or so, she was the principal at the grammar school where my kids went to. So shout out Carol Friedman. Obviously, there's so many dimensions to this. You know, there's so many dimensions. Is the availability of guns is a huge part of it. The mentality that this is how you settle differences somehow or other, that's like enshrined in so many people's minds here in the city of Chicago, and as I said, across the world. And then the aftermath, the trauma. So who will be there to help children at Ascend navigate this? I hope we have the resources in our city and our Chicago public schools to deal with this.
And not just the Chicago public schools, right? It's got to be, a huge effort from every single agency and every single community member. Like, where is your role in this? You know, operation, basically. We're going to come together for a vigil tonight at 7 o'clock at the church on Thorndale. And, we're going to have to dig deep, each and every one of us, no matter if you're a resident or a parent or a student or clergy or faith leader or business owner, you know, what is your role in creating a world where all the kids in it have what they need and they have safe passage to and from school, not just in Edgewater, but every single sidewalk in Chicago and every single of our 77 community areas, you know? And those are real basic things, you know? We need to make sure that everybody's fed water, clean water. You know, we need to make sure that they have a place to sleep. They can lock the door and feel safe at night. And then they have to see a vision where they have a world that they want to live in, you know, where they have jobs and, you know, that they have family and friends that they will support them and have this mental support that they need, mental health supports that they need. If there's nothing else that we took from COVID is that we need to destigmatize mental health, but that we can't stop there. There's so much disinvestment in Chicago, and we have to address the root causes. Because if we don't, we're going to continue to spiral into this world where we just want to continue to lock people up, including 15-year-olds, and that's not the answer either. People must be held accountable. And they also need to get the help that they need to get on the right path. And parents, they need to do their thing, right? But also, it takes a village, right? So it really does. And so I think about in Edgewater, we're very, very, we're lucky in so many ways in Edgewater to have the public amenities that add to a great quality of life, you know? Actual sidewalks that aren't broken, you know, roads that are fairly well kept up, you know. We actually have roads that have curbs, you know. There are some Chicago roads that don't have any curbs. We have a great transit system that runs through the ward and connects us to downtown and all over the city. And we have great schools too. And yet, even with all of the things that we have, we still are suffering from gun violence because people are not getting what they need, and especially our young people. We just have to do better. So I'm, again, really grateful that we have two police districts right on that border. So we are working with the commanders for each of those districts. And we're also working with the mayor's office because we have, we've got to reimagine what public safety is, right? So let's start right now and do it better and make sure that these kids, all kids, have a reason to live.
Lenny, let's move on and close with this. You mentioned something in that great riff you went on. You were talking about how in 2016, and many people like you became aware of the challenges, to put it mildly, our political system was facing with the election of Donald Trump, and you got involved. Here we are, and that's pretty much where Lenny and I met. We were allies. I say it openly. We were allies in opposition to Donald John Trump. So Lenny would always be connecting me with people to come on the show and talk about organizing in various communities, red districts, blue districts, whatever, swing districts. Here we are, Lenny. I can't believe this. 8 years later, Lenny, wow. And Donald John Trump is... He's running again, and it doesn't matter, sexual assault charges. I mean, convictions, jury in New York, business fraud, inciting an insurrection, stealing government documents. Let's not forget that one. Just bizarre, twisted, weirdo behavior every day at an open mic. The man's a lunatic. 45% at least of the country is part of his cult. God damn. It is, on one level, if it's like you're really into the absurdist humor, it's funny. Like, they'll seize on any opportunity to fire up their little megaites. And so now they're going after Taylor Swift. They're so weird and twisted. I don't know, Lenny. Put on your... Did you see this coming back in 2017?
Oh, that's when you know March.
What, man? This fight is never going to be over, Lenny. It is ongoing. Oh. You can't let up for 1 second, can you?
No, you cannot. I remember my kids were younger, of course, at the time, 8 years younger, and that they were showing me all these memes. One of them was a hair dryer, and it was, you could point to where the hair dryer would be, but then it would point to Donald Trump's hair, and then it would like shoot this way or that way. And, it was all funny. And then he won. And I could not even describe, like, you felt it too, but I felt like I had to hold it in with my kids and not, share how terrified I was because of the rhetoric that he, with the words that he was using, everything that he said about women and grabbing them, I don't even want to say it, but he did. He said it over and over. And when your kids look at you like, what's happening? I could not do nothing. I mean, that was one of the reasons why we met, because I started organizing, to get people out into the streets, right? Locally. And that was the whole women's march. And you maybe have stories about that, but that whole story is about people organizing on every single continent locally to bring people together to do a very symbolic thing, which is to march at their congressional capital or wherever they were. We went to DC. We took 10,000 Illinoisans from Chicago and all over the state to DC to march on the streets, to walk in solidarity, to be together. I mean, that's the whole point of gathering like that, to be together, to be in solidarity, to say that we we are not going to go back. We are, in fact, we actually have less reproductive rights than we did before. But beyond that, you know, we're not going to go back. We're going to keep going. We're going to keep marching. We're going to stay together, especially when you're talking about the rights of women and LGBTQ plus rights. You know, we cannot go back. We have to keep marching forward. And so because of that moment, I came back and I said, what can we do next? You know, we got to learn, like, how can we get involved at the local level? And so at the local level, turns out I looked at who our congressional people were. And my congressperson was Jan Schakowsky. Jan Schakowsky is representative of the 9th Congressional District, and she happens to be one of the most progressive representatives in Congress. And so because of our relationship that we built with her through Indivisible, through the Women's March, we were able to work together to give her the strength that she needed. Well, she didn't need any strength. She's Jan Schakowsky. But for her to say, when she went to D.C., to say that my constituency, you know, 100,000 of them or whatever the Congress people represent, they want this. You know, I'm here to represent them. And that's what I am doing now, you know, and working with Jan Schakowsky to say that I am representing the people in Edgewater in the 48th Ward. But that's what we have to continue to do, because everything that we want, we can start it at the local levels. And that is where the power is, because that's where we live every day, Ben. You know, I'm really grateful that I met you at this time. You know, I learned a lot about media. You know, it reaffirmed my belief that media is so essential to a strong, healthy, working democracy. And so we have to take care of our journalists, because they are on the front lines. They are the ones that are really listening to the stories, and they are curating the narrative that we need to make right now, which is that democracy matters, and getting involved in local issues matter. And especially in Chicago, where, you know, we are a world of activists, we're a town of unions. We know that we have been organizing for this long, but we need the media there too, right? To be on our side. And so it's so important for us to continue to have these real relationships, not social media relationships. That is a world that is fraught with trolls and disinformation and misinformation. And that's where we can fall off the world, you know. By the way, the Philippines is like the number one use country of Facebook, you know, because it's free. It's it's an easy way to keep in touch. But there's too many ways that it can be twisted and used used against you in a very, very frightening ways. And we know that because we've heard about it in our schools and how social media can be a place where, you know, kids' self-esteem is dependent on the number of likes that you get. And that really does erode on their self-esteem and their self-worth. And that can lead to disastrous consequences. So that is another reason why we need to keep in touch with each other. We make real communities in real time, like this right now. You know, we could be chatting too. You could have sent me the questions, but no, this is way more valuable. And this is why, you know, I love you, Ben, and all you do. And we need to keep these conversations going and make sure that every, you know, not only our government continues along a path that we can trust those that represent us, but also media is also sharing the story of what we do and how we do it and why we do it. And I believe, you know, if we don't have those two things in place, as well as community engagement, we are going to fail. And we are going to lose the democracy that we love so much here.
That is great, Riff, Lenny. And we'll close, since you mentioned media, we'll close with this. Shout out Gregory Pratt, dear friend of this show, and all his Chicago Tribune brothers and sisters. Greg, I just want you to know, if you're listening, and I know you will be eventually into this, did not click on any Tribune link today, okay? I am not crossing that picket line, that electronic picket line that you set up. So in support of the reporters, the journalists at the Tribune who are really dealing with, don't get me started about Alden. That's a whole other story, capitalism and the media. And yeah, that's a whole other thing. Lenny, figuring out a new way to support media as we head off. And the old ways have obviously failed. We can see that in just how the newspapers themselves have shrunk in this city. So we have to figure out new ways of doing that as well. So shout out Greg Pratt. I'm with you. I'm pretty
sure. Well, you can also thank Taylor Swift, you know, talking about using your platforms for good, right? You know, one of the things that I did was to get people registered to vote. And I thought that I was pretty good at it, but it's nothing compared to Taylor Swift and what she's doing with one post, one social media post. She's got like 35,000 new voter registrations during National Voter Registration Day in September. And her cat is worth like millions now because of their social media influence. I mean, we need every single person who has a platform to take the first step and encourage their friends and families to check their voter registration or register to vote if you're eligible to vote, because it matters. It really does.
Shout out Taylor Swift. Hey, Taylor, by the way, if you're listening, more than free to come on the Ben Jarofsky Show. Love to have you on. You can bring your boyfriend too, Mr. Travis Kelce. What the hell? No, that Taylor Swift thing is a complete joke. It's a MAGA has lost its freaking mind. And like I said, Lenny, it's scary, but there's also an absurdity to it all. That is, if you just remove yourself from the threat of danger of fascism in this country and the laws of democracy, then you could just like smile like Donald Trump and MAGA. They're so insane. They're incapable of hearing how insane they are with the things they say, like the notion that the NFL Football League is somehow or other ginned up a conspiracy to reelect Joe Biden. The owners of the NFL are some of the most conservative capitalists in the world. They love Donald Trump's tax policies. Are you kidding me? Anyway, Lenny, sorry. I didn't mean to go on that insane riff. Lenny, I'll let you get back to your day. I know you're really busy. Thank you so much. We had a few technical glitches at the outset of the show, but we settled into a groove, and I think it ended well. So whoever your IT people are, thank them as well. I saw somebody hovering in the background. I don't know who it was. And we'll bring you back real soon. It's been too long. All right, Lenny?
Thanks, Ben. Thank you so much.
All right, that's Lenny Manna-Hoppenworth. Also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. I think Lenny will agree with me when I say, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, you can stay updated on all things Jarofsky at chicagoreader.com and all things Chicago at chicagoreader.com. Follow Ben on Instagram at Benny J Show. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow The Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming podcasting platforms.